from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hey, you mentioned, Seth, yesterday, the our security guy in the building here in the lobby, Brazil.
Brazil, yeah.
Brazil said the nicest thing to me on the way in today, man. Like, I walk past him when I come in the building here, you know, whatever time I get here, and he's working the desk, and he's always really cool, and he just says, hey, what's up, have a good show. Today he says to me, he goes, man, you know my favorite part of the day is when I get in the car after I leave here and I listen to you and Seth on my way home. I'm like, man, that is really nice. It was a good reminder, man. It was a good reminder, like helping people escape a little bit. You know what I mean? So that was cool.
I hope he doesn't use that against other people, though. You're like, why can't you be more like Seth and Sean?
I hope he does. That would be a real that would be a real honor if he's just walking around all bitter that nobody else in his life is me or you.
This ain't Payne and Pendergast, I'll tell you that much.
Right, everywhere he goes.
Tells his wife when she brings she makes dinner for him. He's like, it's no Payne and Pendergast. Yeah. These potatoes are all right, but it's no P&P.
It ain't no P&P, yeah. So shout out to Brazil. We appreciate that, man. Appreciate all you listeners. A lot of people saying nice things. Football, people are in a good mood this football season. You know, it's the Texans have people in a really good mood. Like, I was on Zoom call with a client yesterday. I told you I was at Taquerias Arandas last night. Like, everybody's like, man, this, your job's got to be a whole lot of fun right now with the Texans the way they are. And I'm like, yeah, well, our job's fun all the time, but it's definitely more fun when the team is good, you know?
Yeah, it's fun during training camp with this as opposed to, like, going through a training camp of trying to explain to people who the various players on the team are or why. Hey, Christian Kirksey, it makes sense, okay? It just makes sense, all right? Yeah, just thank me later. I don't know.
That was a rough one. 2021, where our answer to everything about who they brought in was, they're trying to get the culture right.
They want to get the culture right. It's easier to talk about now because I do think, you know, like Nick wanted to set a template for how you do things where this is what they had done in New England, which is a good thing. You know, Nick's not copying everything they did in New England, but yeah, you sign veteran players to 1-year deals because they provide, you can depend on them, they're reliable. Hopefully, if you're drafting well, the younger guys are developing along the way.
Yeah.
Now they're doing the same thing now, they're just doing it at a much higher price tag.
You know,
Danielle Hunter's on a 2-year deal.
Yeah.
And they obviously can provide a lot more as a player.
They're actual really good football players and culture setters, you know?
They want to
come here, they want to play here. One of them that we can cross off the list as of yesterday, I know this was somebody Texan fans were really hot for, because I guess on most lists of guys who are still available, Justin Simmons, former Broncos safety, is probably at or near the top of that list. He will be an Atlanta Falcon. Atlanta's had a good week this week. I mean, these are older guys, but they're in a division where it's not a good division. They're favored to win the division, and they go out and they get two veteran Pro Bowl at their peak and fairly recently Pro Bowl caliber players in Matthew Judon in a trade. They give Justin Simmons 1 year, $8 million. If you were the Texans, would you have given Justin Simmons 1 year, $8 million?
I would have loved to, like, yeah, the more the merrier, that'd be awesome, et cetera, et cetera. I think when you look at it from the way the team is composed right now, you've already spent a good chunk of change on free agents who are in their 30s.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You know, you've got Jimmy Ward back there, who's in his 30s and has been banged up a good amount the last couple of years. And I think there's a delicate balance between having veteran leadership and then or just being old.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't sit here and ask the Texans to spend aggressively till the end of time, especially if they, I think I was waiting for kind of a reaction from the fan base of disgust that the Texans didn't give him a one-year, $8 million deal. You'd figure, okay, if you're Justin Simmons and you've got a chance of going to the Texans or the Falcons right now, the Texans are a shinier object.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that people are excited about Kalen Bullock makes a big difference.
Yes.
I think that Kalen Bullock has flashed a little bit in these first couple games. I think that's where people are getting it and thinking, okay, if they like this young guy and you've already got some veteran safeties out there, then I can see where they're going with this.
He's flashed in the two games, and I can tell you he's flashed in nearly every practice as well. Like, you're a Texan fan, like you were talking, Seth, about guys that maybe not so great in practice but good in the games or vice versa, he's been both. Like, Kalen Bullock looks to be, early on here, a really good pick in the third round for this team.
Well, you can see the potential, too, when you've got a guy who's as rangy as he is, and you're playing in a defense where they're going to be playing a lot of zone. That means your defensive backs are in opportunities to break up balls and make interceptions.
Yep.
And I think with Kalen Bullock, you know, even though he didn't have a realistic shot in an interception on that deep ball during the last preseason game, the fact that he was even there,
yes,
from coming from the middle of the field, you can just see the potential for that. And some of the things, I mean, that's what hurt the Texans defensively last year, was a lot of the deep shots.
Yeah.
They were much better in many regards, but man, they let up some deep shots. They were suckered in on play action. So to have that deep center fielder safety net that could also maybe make some plays on the ball, it's enticing. You see the upside there.
No doubt. Hey, real quick, one other NFL news item we didn't get to in headlines. The Bills, man, this is a big hit. Matt Milano, their middle linebacker. And I bring this up because the Texans play the Bills in Week 5. So, yeah, like anything that negatively impacts an early season Texan opponent, I think is worth updating. Torn biceps. That just sounds painful, man. Torn biceps. They're hoping he's back in December. I guess he's getting surgery on it, and they're hoping he's back. That's a lot of hits to that Bills defense, Seth, when it comes to leadership, because they already had to get rid of Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer because of cap reasons in the offseason. It's a lot of leadership walking out the door in Buffalo.
Hey, Matt Milano, I got to imagine in Buffalo people are kind of getting tired of Matt Milano's injuries. And he's another one of those guys where if you look at it, like, okay, yeah, I mean, he's played four seasons where he played. He's only had three seasons where he played 15 or more games.
Yeah.
So, like, he's missed serious time to injury a good chunk of
last year included. Yeah.
The last 4 years, he's had two big injuries where he only played five games in 2023 and in 2020. So, I think he's one of those guys that people love, except they just don't feel like they can depend. He's turning into Lance McCullers.
Well, and the problem, I guess, if you're trying to, like, psychologically move on from him, one of the years he was fully healthy was 2 years ago, and he was an all-pro. He was really, good, you know? It's tough.
But he plays a pretty physical position.
He does.
So many linebackers like him that have been... Dan, the current GM of the Panthers is one of them.
Dan Morgan.
There's going to be collisions.
Yeah.
There's no avoiding it. And if you're a guy whose body just doesn't hold up well to a lot of collisions, then maybe that's what he is.
Yep. All right, I got a six-pack of people and things looking to watch for on Saturday. I've even got a sound effect for this. First one. Yeah. John Mechie III. John Mechie III. Now, Mechie has been better in practice this week, but he's coming off of, Seth, two games where he has been total non-factor. One catch for minimal yardage and a drop in each of the first two preseason games. And unfortunately, that was augmented with a week and a half period of time where you and I didn't get to see the Ohio practices, but all reports were he was really struggling catching the football there.
Yeah,
he's in a dogfight. With every day that goes by, I feel stronger and stronger that if there is a trade coming with the Texans, it's going to be shipping off at least one, if not more, of these wide receivers for some of that pocket change that Nick likes to use draft day where, you know, the fifths and the sixth and the sevenths, where he uses those to go maneuver his better picks and go target guys. That's what I feel is coming. If Mechie doesn't play well, then I feel like that might be what's coming with him.
You know, the dogs are starting to lick their chops around the league. The Texans have entered the chat. When Hollywood Brown got injured for the Chiefs, I just read an article this morning from a outlet up there that mentioned the Texans as having a really deep wide receivers room.
Yeah.
And that maybe if Casario is willing to trade to a potential competitor within the conference, that maybe John Mechie or Xavier Hutchinson. He brought up Xavier Hutchinson.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and Robert Woods, too, just because Robert Woods is still reliable. And like none of those guys have the same skill set as Hollywood Brown. There are different types of receivers, but they're viable receivers.
Yeah.
And I could see at least, especially when you bring Robert Woods into it, I think there's a lot of good teams out there that want a guy who's just very steadily reliable. Seems to always be a half yard past the sticks and catching hard to catch footballs. We saw it last year in the Browns game early on that one of those three guys is likely to get traded.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. Yeah, and I think here's the thing, a couple of them, at least, and I think with Mechie, if he gets cut, he's going to get picked up quickly. So that's why I think a trade could be in the offing here. Number two. Damian Pierce, and it would appear just based on maybe how they were doing the walkthrough yesterday. I shared this earlier with the audience, Seth, that Joe Mixon is back at practice. He was dressed yesterday for the walkthrough, but he didn't do any walking through. Damian was out there with the ones, both 7-on-7 with C.J. Stroud and an 11-on-11 with C.J. Stroud. I think it's way more urgent that they get a good long 8-to-10 carry look at Damian Pierce than see anything with Joe Mixon right now.
I think if they learn from last year, too, you can't use the first five games of the regular season to make a decision on Damian Pierce.
Thank you.
They burned a lot of daylight last year, mm-hmm. which, and I can't remember which game it was, Sean, but where I told you on Monday morning, like, I think Devin Singletary is going to be the starting running back here before too long.
Yeah.
It ended up being a few more games before it happened.
Yep.
And it was frustrating because I think they were waiting for something to click for Damian, and it just didn't happen. I think they got to make that decision during training camp this year and figure out whether it's time to either move on from Damian or just look for somebody else to help be your backup. But if you're trying to make a Super Bowl push, you can't waste time in the regular season.
No.
You can't burn those games up.
Yeah, and this is a different argument now for Damian. Like you said, last year was, okay, can this guy be our starter? Now it's, should he be on the team? You know, like, should he be taking up a spot on the team?
So him getting reps behind the starting offensive line, or at least maybe hopefully four of the five starting offensive linemen, if it, you know, his big struggle has been making his read in the zone running game and then being decisive and making that read quick.
Yeah.
You just can't take forever to make that, because then, like, the whole purpose of zone running is you get the defense running one way, and before they can adjust, the running back cuts up field and hits it that cutback gap lane. And Damian just, he gives the defense time to catch up and to readjust. So with a better look and better reads in front of him, maybe it looks better, but we've got to see it. We've really got to see it tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah.
And if not, I think you got to start making other plans.
Yeah, maybe so. And just mentioning the offensive line, they didn't even make my six pack here, and I'm thinking, like, God, we're going to get, it looks like, our first look at Tunsil tomorrow, so that'll be good. But here's number three. Kamari Lassiter did not play in either of the first two preseason games. So, Seth, we have yet to see Kamari Lassiter, who appears to be, like, with very little, I can say this with very little doubt, he appears to be the starting cornerback opposite Derek Stingley right now. Like, nobody's pushing him right now, it would appear, for that spot. Jeff Okuda has not been practicing. C.J. Henderson's been kind of up and down, and he's missed some time in this camp, as has Lassiter. He's been back at practice this week. But this will be our first look at Kamari Lassiter in actual game action, finally.
Yeah, and I think that Kamari Lassiter seems like the kind of guy that has probably not been happy about not having played yet. I don't think you have to worry about it going to his head that they held him out of the first Hall of Fame game or anything like that. That story from Kirby Smart where Lassiter was thinking about sitting out the bowl game his final year and then just watched practice for a couple times, and it was so miserable not being out there playing that he ended up playing in the bowl game.
Yeah.
I think he's probably raring and ready to go in this one.
Yep. We won't, unfortunately, get to see him, it sounds like, against Malik Nabers, because Malik Nabers has a foot injury. But there are a couple young wide receivers that the Giants are really trying to figure out right now. If you've watched the Hard Knocks Giants offseason, you know that their Jalin Hyatt is a second-year wide receiver out of Tennessee. Wandale Robinson, I believe, out of Kentucky, both young wide receivers. So Kamari Lassiter will, you know, maybe help the Giants figure out what they're doing at wide receiver. But Lassiter is definitely one that is on the list here. Number four in the six-pack, Jalen Petrie. Didn't get to see Jalen Petrie in the Hall of Fame game. Saw very little of the starters in the Steelers game. So we should, Seth, I would imagine, get enough of a sample in this game if the Texans play their starters the same way the Giants are, where the Giants are looking to play them for a half, to where we might see how Jalen Petrie gets moved around as a chess piece here a little bit.
Yeah, well, we already saw it a little bit in the first game because he played both safety and nickelback.
Yeah.
So I think that I don't know how much different you see. I think they... You know, D'Amico said the other day that they don't hold anything back in the preseason in terms of the calls that they make. He's not worried about teams seeing what they do or don't do. But it's, I think with Jalen, when it comes to the blitzes and some things like that, they might hold back a little bit on that. So, but yeah, if we see him blitz four times in the first quarter or something, then yeah, that would be a different version of the Texans defense, so that'd be fun.
Give them something to think about. Give the Colts something to think about in week one, man.
With Jalen Petrie, this is the thing. I was having a discussion with somebody the other day, and I disagreed with them because it was their opinion that Jalen Petrie didn't like contact, and it was confusing to me because I think he likes contact. He just... The actual technique of tackling has eluded him at times. Like, he'll fly in like a kamikaze and try to make contact, but sometimes it's glancing contact because he's too wild and out of control.
Yeah.
Or at least he was in the past. So, just like Matt Burke was talking about how he's kind of had to learn to find that balance between being amped up and just going for it versus when to play a little bit more conservatively. A lot of good tackling is that way, too. You got to know when to go for the kill shot, but then you also other times, but you got to do it with the right leverage, and you got to do it in a way where you're not whiffing on tackles. So that's what I'd like to see out of him. More than how they use him schematically, I just want to see that his actual tackling has improved.
Yeah, go back. I'm sure it's on Twitter somewhere. Go back and find the play early in the game against the Steelers last week where he comes off the edge like he was shot out of a gun. Just throwing his body in there, Jalen Petrie. I don't get that. Like, I don't thinking that Jalen Petrie doesn't like contact. Number five in the six pack. And I was gonna say here the receivers: Stephon Diggs, Tank Dell, Dalton Schultz is my number five here. Kind of a forgotten man in all this. You know, we've gotten all caught up in the three receivers and Dalton Schultz has been kind of left off the grid here. I'm anxious to see if he gets involved at all.
Well, they tried to get him involved in the first game. They tried. I mean, it was a curious. I was kind of surprised that, CJ kind of just figured that Dalton was going to be able to beat that safety down the sideline.
That deep shot, yeah.
And then they would have had Dalton on a bootleg, except that Dalton didn't do a damn thing to hold up the defensive end. So CJ was put in a bind, and Dalton was supposed to block a little bit beforehand, and he just whiffed on that before he released. So I feel like they tried to get him involved in the last game, and that's good enough for him. Just go ahead and block that defensive end next time, and then maybe you'll get more involved.
So if it's not Schultz in the passing game for you, is there a particular receiver or pass catcher that you're more looking forward to than I am Dalton Schultz here?
Xavier Hutchinson.
Okay.
I just want to see more Xavier Hutchinson.
You do?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. Look, Dalton Schultz is going to get what he gets this year. He'll be a good. He'll be exactly what he was last year, and he's going to be a good option, especially when people are, you know, very fixated on the wide receivers. But I already know what Dalton Schultz is.
Yeah.
I want to see Xavier Hutchinson out there with the ones. I want to see him getting some targets when they give somebody one of the big three a spell.
Hey, Ben, you know what Seth just did with my six-pack here? I was about to take my sip of Dalton Schultz, and he just grabbed it out of my hand and just dumped it out like that. He just turned it over and dumped it out. And he crushed the can against his head and threw it on the ground and said,
"Yeah, he had his opportunity. Look, if he had beat that safety somehow, you know, he tried to draw the. It was a poorly thrown ball by CJ too. But he had his opportunities. He had his opportunities.
All right, number six. New kickoff rule, episode 3. Here's Frank Ross. If you missed this, this was Frank Ross a couple of days ago. Keep in mind, this is the Texans special teams coordinator, and I am not throwing shade at all at Frank Ross about this. I think he probably mirrors what 31 other special teams coordinators are going through right now with this new kickoff. But, I mean, this thing is still just a big mystery to a lot of these guys.
Yep, challenging, exciting. On both ends of the spectrum, challenging and exciting, not figured out. All right, I don't have their secret recipe, and hopefully whoever thinks they do would be remiss and say that. It's going to be hard, and it's going to be an evolving process. Week 2, week 3, week 4 are going to look different than week 8, 9, and 10. So we're going to continue to evolve and continue to ask players for feedback. One thing I do know is, it's going to be a challenge weekly for us to cat and mouse, and there's going to be so much new exploratory things from, call it, the other return units and us in coverage, that we're going to have to adjust mid-game every time we step out on the field. And so we're going to see how versatile we can be in making adjustments.
That's the part that intrigues me, Seth. Not that this thing in the first couple of preseason games has been anything that's been worth watching. Like, it's been a tough watch. Like, there haven't been a lot of big plays broken with this thing. It still looks really awkward to me.
Yeah,
I'm just anxious to see if these adjustments that Frank Ross is talking about, if it starts to look any different with teams here as a preseason.
Well, okay, so I think part of it is that I don't know if you're going to get fireworks or not, but the stats from the first week are that the average drive start was, I want to say, somewhere between 5 and 10 yards further down the field than the average drive start under the old kickoff rules.
Oh, okay.
So, like, that, even if it doesn't yield fireworks,
yeah,
it might just result in more scoring if offenses are starting with 5 yards better field position than usual.
Yeah.
And, I mean, these numbers are going to change as teams start to figure it out. I thought that the collisions weren't as awkward and weird. I'd love to have big collisions, but I don't want them to be awkward, weird ones. So when I went around to watch different games, you didn't see as many guys just like wildly out of position and getting hit at awkward angles.
You're
and all
referring
that.
To the it was really awkward in the Hall of Fame game, is what you're talking about. And then you're saying the games you watched in the real first week of the preseason, it looked a little more normal, I guess.
Yeah. And there was a big return last night in the Patriots-Eagles game.
Okay.
Somebody had a nice return out to like the 40 or 45
okay.
or so.
We haven't had any of them go for a touchdown yet, right? I don't think so. Yeah.
I know there have been some respectably exciting ones.
Okay.
Just, you know, guys getting out to the 40 or so.
Yep. Those are my six. Those are my six pack of things and people I'm looking to watch in the game tomorrow. Noon kick, 9 a.m. pregame, 9 a.m. Texans countdown. If you're going to the game, stop by. Seth and I are going to be in the same spot this year that we were last year. It's a stage right outside Bud Light Plaza, right across from the Modelo Beer Garden or whatever it is they call it over there, right in between the Astrodome and NRG Stadium.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sportsbook on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
We like to get a little petty on this show. We may start to organize our pettiness this season with the PettyCast, but I saw this yesterday. Benjamin Solak, who is an NFL analyst at ESPN. Apparently, he's been at the joint practices between the Browns and the Vikings, Seth.
Yes.
And he tweeted this yesterday. 2 days of joint practices with the Browns and Vikings. Only one takeaway for me. Either these are the two best defenses in the league, or these offenses, ..
Yeah. Oh,
it's a
shame.
Yeah.
We've heard reports that, what's his name?
Deshaun. Yeah.
Deshaun Watson is had a steady diet of short routes.
Yeah.
A lot of dink and dunk.
Yeah.
But has really struggled with the deep ball.
Yeah.
And that's just it's a damn shame, Sean.
Yes.
A damn shame indeed.
It really is. And that the Vikings are struggling too, and they play the Texans, checks notes. Week 3, that's a shame, too. Hate to see that. Hate to see Sam Darnold struggling.
Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. That's, man. Oh, yes. 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 Injected into my veins.
Cannot wait.
I'll schadenfreude the hell out of this. I'm glad that both those teams' offenses look like crap
right now. Me too.
And but now the Browns' defense, very good and respectable.
It is.
So, yeah.
It is.
The Browns team, but for the quarterback, has been pretty damn solid.
It's a really
good
roster.
Over the last few years. They just can't find it. They've entered Colts territory.
Yeah.
They've entered Colts land.
Yes.
Where, oh, wow, we've got this great team, and yet nobody to actually run it.
Right.
You know? You've got a finely tuned muscle car, but you've got a little old lady at the steering wheel.
Well,
and you're just not going to win any
analogy.
Races that way.
Yeah, and yet somehow they keep finding ways to pay these guys. You saw they paid Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah earlier this week. He got 3 years, $39 million. The Browns now have the most players of any NFL team with salaries of $10 million or more per year.
They've pushed a lot of stuff off into the future. They've kind of hedged their bets where they're like, all right, it started out as, okay, we've got this roster that's ready to win right now.
Yeah.
And people were like, Browns fans were wondering, man, you got to capitalize on this. Deshaun's suspended, but like the roster is right now. And now they've shifted to, all right, how can we keep this core together until after we figure out a way to get rid of Deshaun?
Correct.
Because they can't. The contract for Deshaun is so unwieldy that there's almost nothing they can do to give them relief on his contract. So they just got to ride it out.
Man.
They've pushed everybody else off into the future. But with Deshaun, they're like, we'll just keep it just as it is.
That trade's a disaster because they've never in their history, and I'm just talking about their history being this second phase of the Browns that came back in 1999, they've never had a roster like this. Like, it's a really, really, really good roster. And that's the irony of the whole thing, is the big sweeping move they made to finally push them over the top is probably what's going to keep them from being able to take advantage of this incredible roster they've put together.
They do better with Jacoby Brissett right now.
Yeah.
As they actually have, right? I think on the wins and losses.
Yeah. Well, Deshaun actually won games. Like his record as a starter last year was like 4-1 or 5-1, but he stunk. Which goes to show you, like, that's how good the roster was.
Right.
He was terrible, and they were 5-1 with him as a starter last year.
The other thing, too, is, I mean, I think when they first signed Deshaun and they gave him that contract, the thinking was, well, yeah, but, you know, it's all guaranteed now, but we're going to be able to push that off. After he leads us to a Super Bowl victory or so, we'll just renegotiate it and push some of it into the future, yeah, et cetera, where they want to do the exact opposite now. We got to burn this contract as fast as possible.
You know what else they probably thought, too, Seth, was, well, I mean, I know this looks like an exorbitant contract right now, $46 million a year for Deshaun Watson, but the cap's going up, and in a year, that's going to look like a really good deal, because that's what happens with big contracts. We said that about Nico Collins' contract a month and a half ago, that, like, yeah, you know, like $24 million, that's probably a good deal, but it's going to look like a really good deal 2 months from now. Deshaun's deal does not look good. Big news in media yesterday was ESPN making more cost-cutting moves. Remember, they had that big purge like a year ago that got like 20 big names, including Jeff Van Gundy. Yesterday, it was Sam Ponder, who has been the host of the NFL Countdown show on Sundays for the last few years, wife of former NFL quarterback Christian Ponder, and RG3, Robert Griffin III, both fired from their seven-figure contracts, is what I read.
Seven figures?
Dude, that depressed me. When I found out RG3 was making like seven figures, I'm like, oh my God. What have I been doing with my life?
I don't know. I think the whole thing with RG3 was, he's not my cup of tea, but I could see where they would like him on television. I think a lot of people probably like him on television. He's got a very, his TV persona is very big. He says a lot of things I don't necessarily agree with, but he says them really well.
With,
like,
gusto.
No. I mean, like, but not in like a nonsensical way or anything. I thought he was good on television in terms of being somebody that a lot of people would probably want to tune into.
His tryout tape supposedly knocked it out of the park, and he was viewed as a rising star. Like, he was getting recognized by a lot of outlets as, like, this is the future of broadcasting here.
Felt like when it came to just as a broadcaster, he had like a Nick Wright type of eloquence to him, mm-hmm, in some ways, like where you can spit out he can passionately spit out some like pretty detailed and involved stuff, which is hard to do.
It's hard to do.
I've learned.
It's hard to do. Yeah, it's hard to do. I think where RG3's star probably fell, one, I think once he got in the booth, especially doing college football in games, he got a little corny and off track. You know, like he would veer off of learn me some football, RG3. So that was that. And I think a lot of people kind of honed in on that, like his style. And I'm just saying people, like yesterday, as I'm listening to people online, on the radio, talking about RG3 getting fired, that they were really zoomed in on the content that he was putting out, both on the air, on TV, social media, opinions he had, things like that. I think that my feeling is that I thought it was his campaigning for open quarterback jobs that ultimately did him in. And if you're wondering what it is I'm talking about, there's two instances that I was able to find very easily just by putting in RG3 lobbying for job. It took me 15 seconds to find these two. This first one was RG3 on the Dan Lebatard show in early October of last season, after Aaron Rodgers had gone down for the season, saying, yeah, if the Jets called, I'd take that job.
I am a supporter of Zach Wilson right now because everybody's been on him like white on rice. And if the Jets were to come to me next week and say, hey, we'd like to bring you in and get you ready to start for us, you know, for the rest of the year, I would certainly do it. Like, it's been no secret there.
Look at
it's
that.
Been,
it's, can't put this one on
no,
the reason.
No, wait it's a been minute. No secret. Clip it right I'm there. Clip it right wait there.
Okay, that's number one. Number two, mid-November last year after the aforementioned Deshaun Watson went out for the season with a shoulder injury, and before we knew that Joe Flacco would turn into Miracle Joe Flacco, RG3 goes on social media. He wasn't even on a show answering a question. This was him literally making a video lobbying the Cleveland Browns to sign him to be their quarterback.
The Browns should sign me as their starting quarterback, and here's why. One, at 33 years old, I understand the game better than I ever have in my entire career. I know how to slide, and I know when to slide, and that was a huge issue in my 8 years in the NFL. But I've learned. I've learned from my mistakes, and I'm ready to showcase that I can get it done. But here's the thing. Deshaun Watson went 14 for 14 in the second half against the Baltimore Ravens, and he used his legs to go out and scramble and extend plays. Of those 14 passes, there weren't really any of them that you would say were $230 million worthy passes. All they needed him to do was manage the game because of them dogs they got over there on defense, starting with Myles Garrett. Well, guess what? I can do that. I can go out there and manage a game for the Cleveland Browns and help them go on the Super Bowl run that they want to go on. But here's the second thing. I still run a 4.3 40, people, and I can throw the football 80 yards. I train every week like an NFL football player so I could be ready for moments just like this. So they need to hit my line.
Good, yeah, Ben, good enough. I want to make sure I get my point in here on this. I forget about whether it's a good take or not. That's two instances within a month of each other where he's openly saying, I want this job in the NFL. Now, keep in mind, ESPN is paying him a seven-figure salary to be on TV at this point. So I'm not saying they should have taken him off TV at the time because of that. But I can tell you, like, when you're in upper management at these places and you're looking and it comes time for the Grim Reaper to bring in the guillotine and start chopping off heads, that yeah. stuff matters, dude. Like, we're like, okay, well, who are we going to get rid of? Well, this guy... We're not even sure that we're the job he wanted to have. He's openly lobbying to try to get back into the NFL. The guy could leave us high and dry at any time if an NFL team comes calling. And we've seen ESPN do it with other people, too, trying to get back into playing or coaching. I think Van Gundy's an example of that. I think that's the biggest thing that did RG3 in my opinion. Is that he still wants to play football, and he's flaunting it out there.
That was the one. It's like when he first started in on that, I thought he was kind of going to say it jokingly or something, but it was all
he had the
CV in front of him, you know, like it was like he had that on the teleprompter that like, yeah, these are my selling points.
Yes.
It was a little too impassioned a plea for somebody to sign him.
Yeah,
it was it's weird because I always felt like a broadcasting company should kind of want that. Like, it brings buzz to it. You know, like the sensationalism of it or just making it into a story or something. ESPN's really good at creating stories off of hypotheticals. I feel like they would actually enjoy that part of it, but I don't know. Well, I know a lot of people, like, so I'm seeing it on the text line. A lot of people just flat out really did not like RG3, the broadcaster.
Like, yeah.
I didn't like him, and yet I appreciated that he did some things really well as a broadcaster. So, like, that's always, I've been in this business long enough that there's lots of guys I don't like, but that I can appreciate what they do. And I felt like, especially by former athlete standards, he's way better at it at many parts of it than others are.
He cut through.
This is where I get stuck sometimes, Sean.
This
is where I get stuck. So, okay, there's like, you know, the old code speak of like, oh, he speaks so well. Like, there's like some racial undertone sometimes to when you compliment somebody by saying he's a really good speaker, but it sounds more like a tussle of the hair. Like, oh, yeah, much better than I would expect.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a hard time when the actual job is speaking, I've tried to figure out ways to say it to where people don't get triggered because the actual job is speaking.
Yeah.
You know, like there's I need suggestions on the text line for how I can genuinely and understanding all the biases and everything else that go into it and code words and all that. How can I actually give that compliment without triggering people when the job is speaking?
Right.
Like, I want to compliment his speaking.
Yes.
And yet if I do it, it gets perceived as somehow some kind of a slight.
I don't
know how to do it.
I see what you're saying.
I'm genuinely asking.
Yeah.
I've struggled with this.
713-572-4610. Text in. Help Seth out with this issue. All right. Stephon Diggs. I'm looking forward to watching Stephon Diggs this weekend. He's had a great week of practice. How are they feeling about Stephon Diggs up in Buffalo. Buffalo reporter and sideline reporter kind of laid out how they're feeling in the building up there about Stephon Diggs, and we'll hear from him coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Right, Stephon Diggs is a huge topic around the NFL coming into the season here. It's been all good so far here. He's looked really good as a player, looked really good as a teammate. And D'Amico Ryans really likes Stephon Diggs. Here was Pete Prisco, CBSSports.com, who, reminder, when Pete Prisco did his top 100 players in the NFL earlier this offseason, plus 50 honorable mentions, Stephon Diggs was nowhere to be found in the top 150 for Pete Prisco.
That was Prisco. I've heard this take from Prisco, I think, at least three times now.
Yeah.
That we're about to play. Prisco is not a Stephon Diggs
at
lover.
All. Not a Stephon Diggs guy at all. And here's Pete Prisco. He was on FanDuel. He was on a show on FanDuel's stream and talked about not only Diggs, the disappointment that Diggs is going to be, but also possibly the disappointment the Texans are going to be this year.
Well, he wasn't good for the Bills in the last couple of years, and he wasn't good on the football field the last 10 games of the season last year. If you go look at his numbers, they were below average, to be honest with you. And being in Buffalo last week, or Rochester, when I talked to the Bills, I can tell you they're not too sad that he's gone. Mm. And, you know, look, he's going on a one-year deal, so he's probably going to be on his best behavior with the Texans and try and get a long-term contract. He turns 31 in November. That's old for an NFL wide receiver, so you got to be careful with that. I just don't know how this team's going to handle being the hunted. You know, last year they surprised a lot of people. CJ Stroud's, you know, if he has the same type of season he had last year, he's on his way to being truly special. But that's a bit, you know, we don't know if he can. Sometimes second year quarterbacks fall back a little bit. I don't think he will. But I think this schedule is brutal this year. You play the first place schedule, you play a tough division. I just think it's going to be tough to navigate. I don't see them getting past 9 wins. I got them at 9-8.
Okay, so 9-8. And we'll put the Texans off to the side for a second because this segment's about Diggs. And we'll hear from somebody who's in the building and around the team with Buffalo in just a second. Does he back up what Prisco is saying? Prisco is doing this thing, Seth, where he's on this show and he's given a 90-second take or a minute, whatever it is, and he's just saying things as if they're fact. And knowing that he's probably not going to get that's not the forum where those hosts are going to challenge him on it, where he says Diggs has not been good the last 2 years. He had 1,400 yards and 11 touchdowns 2 years ago. What are you talking about?
And
he's going, the last 10 games, he was average. Like, no, it was more like the last 7 or 8 games. Like, I'm probably nitpicking on that one a little bit, but like...
Well, no, because it is... The problem is, though, you hear this from a lot of people that give the flyby on the stat sheet and assume that's all there is to the story. Like, and we've gone over it. I can't even talk about it anymore, telling the story of the Bills season last year and how they changed the offense. There was a lot more to it. There was not a physical drop-off with Stephon Diggs last year. Now, he had some crucial drops, particularly in the playoffs. So, you don't excuse him from that.
Right.
And then, obviously, on the whole Josh Allen relationship dynamic, who can say? It's like, I'm not denying any of that, but if you look at the stat sheet and try to use that as evidence that he dropped off physically, after in the first two-thirds of the season he was on pace for 1,600 yards receiving, that's not actually telling the story of how it actually happened and how they changed the offense after all that. I would say, I mean, because there's two parts to everything he said. The part about the difficulties the Texans face, those are all valid. Like, that's all valid. You know, those are all actual real challenges. The Texans aren't going to sneak up on anybody this year. The schedule right now on paper looks a lot harder than it was last year. We know that those things change, but those are valid points. I think the biggest mistake people make, though, when they start to have that conversation is they mistake... Like, they talking about things like regression to the mean and everything. The problem is, it's not valid because this year's team is different than last year's team.
Very.
So, if you take last year's Texans team and put it up against this schedule, then yes, they would not do as well as they did last year. It would just, they would probably have lost 2 or 3 or 4 more games. But that's where you have to have the conversation about the offseason and whether you made good moves and whether, free agency is very dicey in the NFL. But it's not as simple as, well, like, I see a lot of people making it as simple as, like, well, last year's team wouldn't have been as good, so this year's team won't be as good as they were last year versus this schedule. And it's just not that simple.
Right. So Prisco says Diggs, that he's hearing things up in Buffalo about how people are glad Diggs is gone. Here's Sal Capaccio. He is the Bills sideline reporter, covers the Bills up there in Buffalo. He's on the radio up in Buffalo. And here's Sal Capaccio talking about Stephon Diggs.
No matter what he did, it was always something with Stephon Diggs. But he was a great player, and by all accounts, he was a great teammate. And, you know, the Bills are going to lose that, obviously. But I do think that there's a bit of relief around the organization that you don't have this player there that brings this really big personality that's always being talked about. And is he happy? Is he not happy? What's the situation with him and Josh? Him and the organization? All those kinds of things. So I think from that standpoint, locker room-wise, it wasn't like Stephon Diggs was a bad locker room guy. Not at all. I think players will tell you he was a really great teammate. But I do feel that there's a bit of relief, like I said, and maybe less walking on eggshells and thinking about that and having to be asked about that all the time.
All right, and that's Sal Capaccio. He was on the Zach Gelb show is where that audio came from. Where you at, Seth, on he was great this, he was great that, he was great player, great teammate, but at least everybody's a lot more comfortable in the building now walking
around. I like the Draymond Green analogy, which is that, all right, sometimes there's negatives to everybody in this world, and sometimes just in the wrong environment, that negative looms large, where in others it doesn't loom as large. And players become different guys in different places. I mean, like, for the first 2 years he was in Buffalo, there was none of this. It was, you know, it was everybody's dream relationship between Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs. They were like a big brother and a little brother. Ultimately, I think that big brother, little brother dynamic might have started to be the problem, you know, like and this happens with young quarterbacks sometimes, that it just becomes too almost emotionally charged of a situation, or there's power dynamics at play. I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I also think that the Bills, as told to me by Bills fans, have questions about their culture above and beyond just Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
There's questions about whether Sean McDermott is the right guy.
Yep.
There are a lot of other things, and I think maybe Stephon Diggs is the easiest one to point to. But I've never heard anything like that he's the cancer that's the cause of all ill or anything like that.
Yeah. You're getting a lot of replies here on the text page, Seth, for your request for I'll let you lay it out. Like, what are you looking for from
the people?
Well,
okay,
here?
So, like, all right. If when I'm complimenting a broadcaster, I need a better tool set for how I compliment them. Because I'm very aware of the fact that if you say a black guy is well spoken, it's like a lot of times that's code speak for saying, oh, well, like, you know, he's, you know, like, it's almost like a tussle of the hair or, like a patronization or something.
Yeah.
And people, I think, get rightfully triggered by that because they can tell if it's almost a dismissive compliment. But I always get very, so knowing that, I get very uptight and trying to, like, when I'm talking about somebody whose job is to speak, like, it's like how well and how well they speak and how eloquent they are and everything else is very relevant.
Okay.
So I always try to toe this line where I'm not like slipping into some kind of cliche or something. So I ask people for advice. The biggest, I got a lot of advice. To sum it all up, the best advice is specificity. Like, and that's where, because you move beyond the cliche and just explain exactly why somebody, no matter what their race, color, ethnicity is, exactly what aspect of speaking they are good at.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as that. So thank you, everybody who weighed in on it. We got about 15 replies.
We did. Some probably fit the bill of what concerns you, like the one where simply say someone is intelligent or well-spoken. Like, no, well-spoken is what got us into this pickle
problem
in the first place. Yeah.
He's actually pretty intelligent.
They have great.
That's the tone that people hear that in, was like, oh, he's actually well-spoken. Like, no, I would never say that. Yes.
The one I like, I would tweak a little when it says he or she has the ability to articulate their points extremely well. I would just say they make their points really well, because that's, you know, like that's something I have a hard time doing sometimes, you know.
I always try to make that point that it's like, you know, they're way better than me or other former athletes that are in. There aren't a lot of former athletes, white, black, Asian, that do a good job speaking into a microphone.
Yep.
But no, pointing out exactly how somebody is articulate or how somebody is well-spoken is just the golden rule.
There you go. Problem solved. Nice job, texters.
Yeah, good job. Oh, somebody said he's well-spoken for a Baylor grad. I'll allow that.
Somewhere my son just threw his drink against the computer right now at 7:55 in the morning. All right, ceiling and the floor. Best case, worst case. What are we looking at for the Texans this year right now? What are we looking at as the best case scenario, the ceiling, or the worst case scenario, the floor? And what's the X factor, non-quarterback, in all of it? We will discuss that coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.